Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents One Night to Kill by Michael Anderley. Narrated by Susan Duoden. Prologue. The Wendy Howard Hotel was a pinnacle of elegance. Surrounded by 50 acres of perfectly manicured botanical gardens, handcrafted rivers and lakes, and some of the finest and most exotic roaming wildlife contained by the grounds around the four long walls of the hotel, the setup was something to be admired for miles around. The hotel stood in the centre of the greenery and waterscapes, rising into the sky and losing its top in the fog. The design was abstract, with sections of balconies skimming around in long arcs, flat rooftops where hotel-goers could bathe in the sun, or stare out at the city of Atlantica a short way off in the distance, and monuments of stone that stood out like shards of peanut brittle. The building had been a combined effort for the Howard family 40 years ago when the Forbes top listers migrated to the island. Since the family's landing in Atlantica, their wealth had only grown. Nobody knew how much money they had, nor how much the property was worth in total, because the family refused to comply with the Forbes listers and give an amount. Many rumours said the family was so rich that a named number didn't yet exist to determine their accounts. Some believed that it was all a front and the businesses were dribbling money away, the family unable to face the public shaming of being further in debt than anyone would believe. All that anyone did know was that an evening stay in the Wendy Howard Hotel was available only to the land barons and the ridiculously wealthy. The Howard family gave new meaning to the word luxury, and although the hotel was publicly available for anyone to stay overnight, few ever did. The procession of cars drove down the long drive toward the building. Carefully clipped grass bordered the pavement. Agoutis ran across the lawn, scrabbling away from the rubble of vehicles. A spotted genet leaped into a nearby tree, scaling up its thick boughs and disappearing into the foliage. Dick-Dick bounded out of sight, losing themselves in the hedges and verges. A rainbow-coloured quetzal swooped overhead, squawking as the headlights bounced off its glorious plumage. The cars were nothing to sneeze at either. A caravan of BMWs, Ferraris, Teslas, Bentleys and Bugattis purred, all of them driving reverently slower than their powerful engines would have liked. The parking lot filled, as men and women in tuxedos and ball gowns emerged in a full array of glitz and glamour. They were greeted at the large mahogany doors by half a dozen butlers waiting with glasses of champagne, whiskey, rum, gin, and every other type of drink to order. The hotel spared no expense as they headed inside the reception room, which was as large as a soccer pitch and fitted with a dozen chandeliers that stretched to the size of cars. A 40-piece orchestra occupied an island in the centre of the room and played classical music under the conductor's direction. Guests milled around, politely talking to one another and catching up on the past few months of business. Shining red lipstick caught the attention of men. A few of the older ladies and gentlemen were half drunk from liquor, and a smattering of the youngest of the gentry roamed around, outnumbered but not outclassed in their finest tailored suits. The reception hall filled during the hour, the guests squeezing closer as the temperature rose from their combined body heat. The ensemble reached the crescendo of their number, then drifted into a silence that pulled the others with it, as a man and a woman appeared on the sweeping staircase that ascended into the hotel's upper levels. Wendy Howard strode down the staircase with the stature of a goddess. She pulled all eyes in her direction, her dazzling silver dress catching the light and throwing an array of rainbow stars into the room. Beside her, a man who looked as old as he did wealthy supported her with the crook of his arm, using the rails to brace himself. Although they were both aged, they held all the vigour of a younger couple, their kind smiles radiating strength as they stopped on the stairs and called the announcement for the rest to follow them to the platinum room. Excitement rattled through the crowd. They followed their hosts, respectful of their slower pacing, and began their ascent to the 13th floor. The Wendy Howard Hotel boasted that while every other hotel in history shied away from declaring the 13th floor due to superstitious nonsense, they had embraced the invisible level and now used the room as a twice-yearly gathering place for Atlantica's elite. Concierges lined the way, regarding the guests with warm smiles. Wendy and Stanley Howard made their way to the second floor, where two sets of golden doors awaited them. A receiving concierge thumbed the button, and the doors opened to reveal a large lift carriage, able to fit up to 30 people with ease. The lifts were specially constructed and rated to handle the capacity. No one joined the Howards in their elevator. As the doors closed on the owners, the concierge called the second one, and guests began to file inside. On the 13th floor, the lifts opened into an enormous ballroom, easily four times the size of the reception area. Music played from a second orchestra in one corner. In another area were tables for craps and poker. In another were hot tubs and jacuzzis, complete with folding screens and separators, as well as stacks of bathing suits in all sizes, freshly wrapped and waiting for the guests. A bar lined one wall with every type of drink you could name, and a few that the world hadn't met yet. The guests slowly filled the space, sticking with their friends and laughing as the drinks lubricated any anxiety and eased people into their comfort zones. Large glass doors opened onto a balcony that lined almost the entire side of the hotel, giving an incomparable view of Atlantica's glittering cityscape. Archie Fontana adjusted his tie with one hand. His other held a sour mash of bourbon and lime in a glass. He laughed at Brendan Schitt's jokes, wondering when the insufferable bastard would leave him alone. For years, Schitt had believed that money automatically gave him charisma, shouting for hours about his underground cocaine business and the fact that no one would ever catch him since he served most of his clients in international waters. He'd offered Archie a stake in the company many times in the past, and Archie had declined equally as many times. Archie knew the dangers associated with investing in hard drugs, and that wasn't where his line of work sat. Despite most of the corrupt and immoral in the room, who used the citizens of Atlantica as the fuel for their businesses, Archie had his eye on a much larger prize. Archie wiped a fake tear from his eye, his 2 years spent in theatrical studies paying dividends, and clapped a hand on Schitt's shoulders. "Another great one, really, simply sublime. I'm awfully sorry, though, but I think I need to get a little fresh air." "Can't handle the booze," Schitt barked, much to the disgust of those around him. "Go ahead, lightweight. I'll catch up with you later. I've just spotted Christine Jorgensen, and, well, you didn't hear this from me, but that bitch owes me big. Been trying to track her down for months. Hey, Christine!" Schitt spun away, and Archie used that moment to dash outside. The air was warm and humid as he placed his hands on the railing and looked out over the city. Lights twinkled back at him, brighter than the stars ever did above, not that you could see them beyond the fog. A small grin appeared on his face as he marvelled at the city, his city, and let his mind drift to greater things. A waitress approached, smooth blonde hair sleeked back into a ponytail, dressed in a clean white shirt and black slacks.
"Hors d'oeuvre, sir."
Archie studied the woman up and down before looking at the plate.
"I'd rather have you."
The waitress blushed and lowered her eyes. There was no sincerity to it. Even he could see that. Howard had trained her staff well, able to take a compliment without showing offence or discomfort. Archie picked up a morsel of food, Turkish figs with anise and walnuts. It went down easily. As he licked his fingers, he stopped the waitress from leaving.
"Answer me a question, would you?"
"Anything,"
she replied.
"How much are they paying you?"
The waitress paused for a moment, then answered.
I'm not at liberty to divulge that information, sir.
Archie nodded thoughtfully. The waitress looked at the other guests, eager to continue serving.
Will that be all?
Archie nodded. As she walked away, his eyes strayed to her ass. It practically called his attention in her well-fitted slacks.
Not at liberty, he thought. That means at least 6 zeros.
Bothering the children again, are we?
A female voice crooned, causing Archie to glance over his shoulder at a woman leaning against the balcony's railing.
Some people never change.
I always see that as a good thing, Archie replied.
Deng Zhenim smirked, her pale white face barely creasing as though her skin was the porcelain it resembled. Her dark hair was tied back into a neat plait, her gown a blazing combination of ruby and gold. Her lips were as red as her clothing as she peered over the horizon toward the same city that Archie had just marveled at.
Do explain.
Archie leaned on the balcony.
Consistency is key when it comes to business. Delivering consistently, maintaining the same values consistently, giving people what they know they should expect. Surely you understand those principles.
Deng nodded.
Consistency has its place.
You disagree?
Archie asked. Deng narrowed her eyes.
If we abide by consistency, the world would never move on. Technology has only progressed as far as it has, due to countless revolutions and revelations. My business is built on disrupting the norms and destabilizing what we believed to be the ideal world and structures. If we were to remain consistent, I would not be sitting on the throne of a successful company leading the charge in the technology sector.
Archie chuckled.
You consistently break the norms.
Deng let out a soft laugh.
Touché.
They were silent for a long moment as the band played behind them and the murmur of chatter trickled out of the room.
You took something of mine,
Deng commented. There was no anger or accusation in her tone, only a faint tinkle of respect. Archie shrugged.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Don't give me that bullshit,
Deng replied gently.
You know the rules of the Conclave. Here, there is honor among thieves. Here we can open up and share in a safe environment, far from the dangers of the outside world.
Her eyes darted toward the center of the ballroom, where Wendy and Stanley were deep in conversation with an older gentleman in a motorized wheelchair. In the center of the chair was a glowing blue core, providing the power needed to function. Archie trailed her gaze to the man in the chair. Not too far away, a woman in her late 30s, who Archie recognized from the cover of several Atlantica magazines, looked stunning in a buttery yellow dress. The headlines of each publication raved about Vanessa's progress in space exploration. If the magazines were correct, Vanessa Hatfield's Infiniverse program was soon to be the first ever successful attempt at landing a manned mission on the surface of Mars. Archie pulled his gaze away, realizing that Deng was staring at him intensely, awaiting her answer.
So what if I did take? Archie asked. What can you do about it at this point? I'm sure you have 1,000 other projects you're working on that make this look like a kindergarten science fair project.
Deng smiled. Again, there was no real emotion in it.
I do. I simply need to understand where to keep my beady eyes and point my security.
She sipped from her glass and stared back at the city.
You're not the first to break into my compound, and you won't be the last either. People are jealous of what they don't understand. They fear what they cannot comprehend. We are working magic at Tynamo, and the world isn't ready for what we have in store.
Archie spotted movement above. On a shallow edge of the building, A black-clad figure pointed a gun toward the men and women on the balcony. He was barely visible, but Archie knew the protocol. They were guards of the Howards. One wrong move during this conclave, and they'd instantly execute their target. The Howards held a tight grip on the party, ensuring that, despite the rivalries and conflicts among the rich, all could gather at least twice a year, possibly overcoming their differences and sharing ideas. Most of the time it fueled new feuds as the guests crossed each other's boundaries and people discovered their true enemies. Archie drew a long breath.
Your AI code is sophisticated. I'm impressed by the security protocols you've set inside. It's just the type of puzzle I need to stretch my brain.
How many levels have you broken?
Deng asked, intrigued.
3.
Deng nodded knowingly.
As I expected.
How much further is there to go?
Deng sipped her drink.
Now that would be telling, wouldn't it?
Archie chuckled. He accepted another hors d'oeuvre, examining the female waiter's ass once more. Deng chewed her lip, eyes narrowing on Archie.
You have a loyal pet in her, you know.
Archie almost choked as he swallowed. He cleared his throat, drawing the eyes of a few groups around him. He gave a weak thumbs up to signal that he was okay.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The Countess, Deng insisted. The Red Countess, to be precise. She's a loyal lapdog, Archie. I'm impressed you've managed to keep her on that string of yours for so long.
Archie cocked his head.
What can I say? Employment with me comes with its benefits.
Deng looked around to check that no one was eavesdropping, then stepped closer. She smelled of magnolia and vanilla. She was a head shorter than him at least, and he had to look down to meet her eyes.
What power do you hold over the girl?
Archie grinned.
I told you. Employee benefits package. It's comprehensive.
No.
She shook her head, not taking any of his lies.
I know that something is up, and I know when someone is playing with fire. You have something over her, and I'm going to figure out what it is. No one can keep such loyalty from an independent contractor such as G. The Red Countess is the best there is. I've seen it firsthand. She wouldn't flip over and have her belly scratched because it feels nice. She'd bite off the hands of whoever tried to chain her. And I don't see any blood on those fingertips.
Archie looked stoically down at her.
Whatever you think you can get from me is impossible. My lips are sealed tight. You can try and take her, but I don't see that being feasible in any way, shape, or form.
He grinned.
Now, if you'd please like to take a step back from me before you get blood on my coat, that would be fantastic.
3 bright red lights danced over Deng's gown. Archie saw the snipers aiming from the roof, ready to fire if anyone stepped out of line. Deng took a step back, eyes not leaving Archie's.
Very well. Understand that once I get my sights set on a target, I don't back down. You watch your back, Mr. Fontana, because you will never know who's watching you from behind.
Archie watched her leave, unable to keep his eyes from trailing down to her derriere. For a cash-loaded bachelor in the world's wealthiest city, he sure had trouble closing the deal with the ladies. Deng disappeared into the crowd, and Archie was once again drawn to the older man lazily driving around in his motorized chair. The rig was unusual, built to the highest specifications of comfort. The blue Atlanticor in the centre throbbed with power. It filled Archie's mind with images of the raw core cells he'd seen in the various functions of machinery and infrastructure across Atlantica. The power source, so desperately sought by the rest of the world, had people prepared to risk their lives to acquire a gram of its infinite power. He drained his drink before saluting the snipers on the roof with the glass. He turned to the balcony and looked out into the city. To the left of the cityscape, the hills rose into great mountains that lost themselves in the fog and wilderness. He fixed his eye on the darkness, thoughts drifting to the golden sextant and the information that his search party had revealed. Something lay deeper, a lost something, a place that modern hands had yet to explore. Chapter 1. Innocuous acoustic guitar music played over the speakers of the late-night diner. The lights were a little aggressive, stinging Isabella's sore eyes. She had been asleep for what felt like 4 days, but she was still exhausted. Bradley sat across from her, a concerned look on his face. A mug of coffee steamed before him, a poor imitation of a heart shaped into the foam.
"So, are you going to tell me what's going on?"
Isabella remained quiet, unsure where to begin. How was she supposed to explain the truth to Bradley? Did she even want to? The last few days had been a colossal headache for her. Isabella was used to sharing her body with her alter ego, but that didn't make things any easier to deal with. They had struck a good balance in the past. Valentina would do her thing mostly at night. Isabella would do hers in the day. Rarely did the two ever meet. Yet here she was, fresh off a couple of days of pure torment, as she panicked in the back of Valentina's mind and tried to remain subdued. She tried telling herself they were only nightmares, but she knew that wasn't true. Waking in the middle of the night to an unfamiliar room, being surrounded by strange machines, glimpsing fights with black-clad attackers. It was all a far cry from the kind of life that Isabella embraced. A quiet existence in the library for her, please, while Valentina spent her time and dollars trying to fix Isabella's brother, a brother that she rarely got to see.
"Bella?"
Bradley lured her from her thoughts.
"You have to talk to me."
Isabella sipped her drink, if only to buy herself more time. When she opened her mouth, she went with honesty.
"I don't know what to tell you, Bradley. I really don't."
"Well, start from the beginning," Bradley encouraged. "That's my favourite place to start."
Isabella chewed her lip.
"Well, start with why you've been missing work," Bradley offered. "Things must have been serious if Naomi was phoning me to find out where you were. She didn't sound happy. I'd be careful going back."
Isabella nodded knowingly.
"I will be."
"So, where were you?"
Isabella considered this, then leaned across the table. She took Bradley's hand in hers.
"Have you ever in your life felt like you weren't in control of your body? That you were someone's puppet or plaything, and they controlled you from the inside?"
She expected Bradley to balk at this, but instead he considered.
"Sometimes. I often feel like the actions I take and the things I think don't align. Why?"
Isabella looked into her cup.
"Sometimes I..."
She couldn't bring herself to say it.
"Sometimes you what?" Bradley insisted. "Come on, Bella. It's me."
Isabella sighed.
"Sometimes I sleepwalk, and I don't know where I go."
Bradley's pause showed his trepidation.
"Go on."
"It's been a problem for as long as I can remember,"
Isabella continued, making it up as she went along.
"In the beginning, it was when I was young. An overactive imagination, they said, believing I was born in a country other than America, making up a different childhood. They promised it would go away when adolescence kicked in and the hormones restructured my biology. It did, for a while. My mother used to find me in empty parking lots, sitting under a streetlight and talking as if she were there."
"Sounds creepy."
Bradley swept a hand through his hair. There were bags beneath his eyes, and he hadn't shaved in some time, although the hipster look was working for him. Isabella nodded, working on her fabrication. What else could she do but lie her way from the truth? Even now, the exhausted Valentina sat in the back of her mind, and Isabella could hear her mumbling, trying to feed her lies to protect them both. Anyway, Isabella continued. They stopped when I was 10, and hadn't really been a problem since then. Now that I'm dealing with a new management position, and everything is changing, I... Bradley shook his head and stroked her hand.
You don't need to continue, Bella.
He leaned over the table and raised her chin with his finger.
Change can do many things to a person. Look at me. Out of a job for a week and living like a vagabond on the streets. I'm half of what I was.
His eyes narrowed as if coming to some conclusion.
You know what? We can both get out of this.
He puffed out his chest and sat up straight.
We can work through the hard times. I mean, sure, our hard times may be different, but we can do it together. You make sure I'm out there, hitting up interviews and seeking a job that'll get me out of this funk, and I'll...
You'll what?
Isabella was afraid of what he would say. The last thing she needed was someone who relied on her. Although, at the same time, it felt nice that someone was taking a genuine interest in looking out for her. How long had it been since Isabella was allowed a true friend? Someone who understood her inside and out, and who helped her through the tough times.
No one has tough times like you, the voice insisted. No one will understand the truth of your life. A lie is how you were born. A lie is what we will be when we die. Empty is better than hurting those around you.
Unwanted, a vision of Kit emerged in her mind. It was a time when he was well and mobile, waving Isabella off after a few drinks down at a local pub near his hometown. That had been the last time Isabella had seen him awake.
I'll keep an eye out for you, Bradley replied. Make sure you're not sleepwalking. Set up cameras at your door. Sit outside all night. Hell, I'll even sleep at the end of the bed if you need me to.
No!
Isabella snapped a little too quickly. The serving staff looked their way for a few seconds before pretending to distract themselves with the one other customer in the place.
No,
Isabella repeated, softer this time.
Look, I appreciate the offer, and I'm happy to help you, but don't take this the wrong way. But I don't need a stalker looking over me.
Bradley's mouth dropped theatrically.
A stalker?
Isabella made to protest.
Relax, Bradley soothed. I get it, I do. But just know that I can't not look out for you, Bella. If you're roaming the streets in the middle of the night, stuck in a lucid dream, you're going to run into trouble. Atlantica isn't safe in the daytime, let alone at night.
Don't I know it?
Isabella thought, remembering the cold, strange room and the panicked man with the stale whiskey breath. Isabella offered a smile.
I know. Look, I'll soothe things over with Naomi tomorrow and get it all sorted, okay? You can stop me if you see me roaming the corridors at night, but otherwise, I'll be fine. Let's focus on you. Let's get you a job, yeah?
Bradley chewed his lip while scrutinising Isabella. At last, he offered.
Fine.
He extended a hand to shake.
Really?
Isabella asked. Bradley nodded to his hand.
I insist.
Isabella took the hand and shook it, not missing Bradley's curious look at her calloused palm and the bruises on her knuckles. What little sleep Isabella did get was wildly disturbed, interlaced with visions of guards clad in black and waking up in strange rooms. Figures stalked her in kabuki masks, and as the sun peered through the windows and brought the world to life, she kicked off the sheets and sat up sharply. Sweat peppered her forehead. The knock on her door had been forceful, followed by a gruff voice muttering words she didn't understand. somewhere deep inside her, Valentina moved, shifting in her disturbed thoughts and dreams. Bradley beamed as she pulled the front door open.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?